Welcome to the Ha Ha Jim Comedy Hour, starring Jim Labriola.
It's the Ha Ha Jim Comedy Hour with who?
Michael Sean Wright.
Our friend's name is Boca, Salvador Boca, B-O-C-A. They call him Sal. He's a sweetheart.
He was a regular on this hit sitcom, Home Improvement. He's also a political activist. He's been recently touring the country with... Please welcome comedian Jim Labriola.
Oh, stop.
Jim.
He's a sweetheart.
On this episode, the one, the only, Colin Quinn.
So now you need leaders to defend yourself. How do you find leaders? Just like today. You don't find them, they find you. I still have friends that try to tell me they're in charge. I'll say it right to you. You need somebody like me to call you on your shit. Thank you. That's just what I felt was lacking in life, was a covertly hostile marginal friend to supervise my behavior. Thanks.
You're not going to believe what these young kids have done to Brooklyn.
By young kids, we mean
people
investment
in their 40s.
Bankers, yeah. Real estate speculators who decided, hey, let's throw a few kids in there as sacrificial lambs in the 90s. After they get killed, we can buy up the property.
Mr. Colin Quinn.
That's right.
Who defined my mid-80s experience because he really changed the paradigm of television. Now, a lot of us were upset that MTV weren't playing a lot of music videos and kind of went away from that, and it got replaced by comedy shows until we see a little show called Remote Control, and it's very funny.
Great show. Great
very
show.
Funny. The first of its kind, my friend.
Yes, my friend.
And when did you meet him? What years in New York would you have been your first encounters with a Mr. Colin Quinn? Because in the early 80s, him, Chris Rock, Adam Sandler used to literally wait in line to audition for comedy clubs.
Wow. We go way. I was Wow. You know what? I think I'm going to save that till Colin comes on.
Okay.
We'll figure it out. We'll try to figure that out.
Yeah, this is just another stall tactic from you is what it is.
No, it's a stall tactic for you because you ain't got it set up right yet. That's what the stall tactics are.
What do you mean I don't have it set up right?
You call the man.
You want me to get Colin Quinn on the phone? Do you want me to get Colin Quinn on the phone?
Get him. You can't even get him on the phone. Get him on the phone.
Oh, for the love of Pete Rose.
Doesn't sound like Colin's ring. Doesn't sound like his ring that I normally get. Is that him? Is that the man? Is that the Sinatra of comedy, folks? The Sinatra.
Whoa.
The Sinatra of comedy. The one, the only, one of my greatest friends, dear friend. I still owe maybe $2,000-$3,000. And if I didn't bring it up. Thanks for doing this because I know your life is so full of so many.
First of all. Yeah. First of all, the only reason I liked it, the Sinatra of comedy, it's the ultimate compliment from you, Taz. You dumb gay, you still love that guy, don't you?
He's not dead, you know.
He's your Elvis.
You know, it took him like 3 years before he died. Remember?
Really?
They wouldn't admit it. Like, nah, he's not. He would be here. He's not feeling good. He's not up to it this week. Meanwhile, he died like 3 years. 3 years they buried him, you know? But nobody would admit it. Nah, he's under the weather. A little under the weather. But he'll be here next week. He'll be here.
Right. Hey, yeah, Pat Cooper on, huh?
Oh, my God. And you know what? He adores you, Pat. If you remember the first radio show I did, remember,
yes,
he used to call up, and he would just humiliate you for 20 minutes. You can't talk.
Well, what happened was, it was during the early 90s, and remember, I'd kind of be doing, like, the character. I'd go, Jimmy, hi, Pat, and I'd do, like, the whole, like self-help guy, and it was just starting to come around, and Pat didn't even know anything about it. So I'd be like, well, Pat, I mean, you know, I'm trying to do an artistic thing here. He's like, who is this kid? Who is it? I go, no, Pat, it's about feelings, too. What feelings? What? What are you talking about? And he's like, Pat, I don't just want to go up and perform. I want to feel a reason for it. Hey, go clean fish for a year. Then you want to perform. You get so mad.
You remember that. Clean fish for a year. That's what he said to you.
Well, go clean fish for a year. I was like, Pat, I feel like the dysfunction. What? What's he talking about? It was like the early days.
You used to get him, though. You get his blood going, man. But that started him off.
Yeah, he didn't know why. He didn't even know me. You know, he thought I was like dead serious. Well, what about, you know, a couple of years ago, I did a YMCA interview with Pat. They asked somebody to interview Pat, and whoever it was couldn't do it. So then they said, would you do it? I said, are you kidding me? It's like my dream. He got up there, and I'm telling you, first he walks up. It was right after Steve Martin had gotten kind of booed at the Y a few weeks before that because he played banjo instead of telling jokes, or he talked about art or something, you know. And so I had forgotten about that. Pat gets up as he's walking in. We walk in to do the interview. The whole crowd said, Steve Martin told me to tell you people to go after yourself. You know, he's there. I don't know if he's personal subject. I was crying, and the crowd starts crying. We all forgot that Steve Martin even was there, but he was just on top of it. And I mean, it was 90 minutes of him just talking about just the brutal truth about his family, how much he hated them. And, you know, I mean, he was just, oh.
Well, that's why he closes at the Friars. Nobody can follow him. He closes
Nobody
up every show.
Him.
No, he's just insane.
Nobody can follow to this day.
No.
You know, him and Rickles are those old guys that are just, they never lose it.
No, 84 years old. We had him on my first guest, Pat. You know, and I thought you wouldn't mind him being the first guest out of respect. You know, you were going to be the first guest.
Are you kidding me?
But Pat, yeah. No, Pat, he went on, 84 years old, Colin, the energy of a 20-year-old. He went on for an hour and like 10 minutes nonstop.
He's unbelievable.
But I'd like to introduce you to my co-host here out in the beautiful land of California, Michael Sean Wright. This is Colin Quinn. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Colin, you know what? I was actually just kind of just enjoy an hour of two friends talking. I mean, we could talk unconstitutional. We can talk remote control. But listen, why am I going to interrupt the flow of two jazz masters? Go!
Wow.
Well, first of all, you already interrupted it by bringing up remote control. You really think I want to go? Why don't we save remote control for when I retire? People have been bringing it up a lot lately. It's starting to piss me off. I went on Rachel Ray. She was talking about it. Then I went on some other radio show. They showed footage of it. And first of all, it's depressing because I never realized how good I looked back then. I really looked great. Like at the time, I thought I look all right. But now I look back, I'm like, oh my God. No wonder I used to get girls all the time.
You were in the leather jackets. But I'd also like to bring up, because I'd like to mention Jerry Seinfeld's name a lot because he needs the publicity.
Yes he does. He does. Yeah. Jerry is, you know. Obviously, going through his. First of all, when I think about not just Jerry, I wish Jerry was the only friend I knew that had that much money, but he's not. Sandler, Chris Rock, all these people are so rich.
Stiller.
And they probably all think, we're all doing good. And meanwhile, I'm thinking, no, we're not all doing good. You're doing great. I'm doing all right.
You're selling out on Broadway. You're making hundreds of thousands of dollars per week. You're selling out on Broadway. It's a packed house. You got to just back the Brinks truck right up.
Wow.
I'm off Broadway. First of all, I'm off Broadway.
He's in Pennsylvania.
When I was on Broadway, I was making $1,500 a week on Broadway.
Colin, do me a favor. Be honest with me.
Yeah.
You mentioned this before. Is that the God's honest truth?
Yes. $1,500 a week because I had to pay back the producers. You don't make anything.
On Broadway.
And now I'm making nothing. You know what I'm making so far in the show? Nothing.
The ticket takers, the union ticket takers on Broadway were making more than you, union guys.
Yeah, sure they were. Well, I mean, you know, the frustrating part is, you know, you're not doing it for the money. You're doing it for down the road, but it could lead to whatever. But I mean, and then if you go on the road, you can make decent money, you know. But I mean, but it's not as much as I thought I would make, you know. Wow. But also, here's what used to bug me the most. I'd be doing a Broadway show. I'm talking about Saturday, three shows Saturday, so I was burnt out from every show sold out. I'm looking at a sold out Broadway house, and I'm still making $1,500 a week. People, where do you get your energy for the show? Because of the anger I felt watching a full house and knowing I was getting no money. So I would have so much energy. He'd go, you really are quite a performer. You got some energy. I was like, yeah. Where does that come from? You know? All I would do is stare. I swear to God, I would stare out of that house and I'd be so mad. I just have energy for it.
And that was a beautiful theater. I went to your premiere. And
It was a small Broadway theater, but it's still like, what, 600 seats?
That's a lot. That's a lot of people.
But if you said, yeah, But you have to sell out. You have to really sell out every night, and you have to be running for a long time to make money. I ran for about 3 months, 4 months, you know. So, I mean, if you run for like a year, the money stuff, for whatever reason, you pay back the producer. It's really about the producers laying out the money, and then you got to pay for the staff. You know, it's like you're paying, everything comes out of there. So you would think one person on Broadway would make more money. In some ways, you almost make less money, I feel like, you know.
You know what upsets me now?
Everyone takes a beating. Yeah.
You know what's upsetting me is that you could have came on the road with the Guidos for $2,000 in a week.
Oh, is that what you guys are getting?
Yeah. He's running the math. He's like, hey, you know what? $500 more a week. Let me see. I do that 6 weeks.
No, you know, I don't understand. And me personally, I saw the. You got great rave reviews on that show. It was phenomenal. You were getting good audiences and that. Why? You know.
Because here's why.
No, why did you get a longer run on that? You should have got a longer run on that.
Listen to me. Here's why. First of all, they replaced me with that, what's that show that they made the movie last year? The 80s, rock and roll, whatever that's called.
Oh,
you know, the movie.
Come on, Michael. You would know this stuff.
Footloose.
No, the one who's the girl from the movie Footloose was actually in it.
Man of La Mancha.
Rock of Ages.
Oh, Rock of Ages, sure.
Man of La Mancha. Yeah. So, I was way off. Go ahead.
That thing sold like crazy. That thing sold like mad. But you know, it's just the way it goes. You can't be doing. Yeah, Broadway's fine. Yeah, I'll never do Broadway. I'll do off Broadway. It's better.
So you're now Barrow's Theater is the home for Unconstitutional.
Yeah, that's
such
like
a great run.
160 seats, you know. So this way, when it's crowded, I don't feel bad if I don't make money.
Wow. Okay. How's this show turning out, man? You got some pretty good
it's
write-ups.
Going great. It's selling good. The write-ups are good. Everything's going great. I feel really good about it.
Wow.
And this time, the complete focus is just on the Constitution. And obviously,
right.
The first one, the whole history of the world. And a lot of famous bits that have snuck its way into popular culture from the first show, the I'll Worry About America when I see a magazine cover that says how to put on 10 pounds. Now it's just part of the vernacular.
Yeah.
And, you know, so just to focus on the Constitution, were you writing that at the same time? Had that kind of a seed in your mind? And I'm going to follow this up? Or how did that happen?
No, what happened was everybody was always saying the Constitution is brilliant. And I never really understood it. I was like, what's so brilliant about it? And like the founding fathers were geniuses. So I just got sick of being like, I felt like I must be missing something. You know what I mean? And I was. So I started like reading about it. And then I was like, wow. I started noticing like this does kind of, you know what I mean? This does kind of like the reason we have the personality we have as Americans, in my opinion, is all because of the Constitution.
Yes. Correct.
So I wanted to do a whole show based on that. And that's what the show is.
Did you watch like the masterful series like John Adams to prep? I mean, what was your writing?
No, I read these. Well, I mean, I watched one John Adams like when it first came out. But first of all, he wasn't there, so you know what I mean. I didn't feel like it mattered anyway. You know, he wasn't at the Constitution Convention. He was in England.
Right.
He missed the whole thing, and so did Jefferson.
So, Michael, why did you bring that up now? A guy that wasn't even there that screws everything up. Why did you bring that up?
Because you're known by the company you keep, right? So during that time, all these guys are extremely close. If I think that Ben Franklin would have had a Twitter account, I think this would have been Anthony Weiner would like never have made like news headlines. Ben Franklin was absolutely out of his mind during that time.
Ben Franklin, you're right. Ben Franklin was the biggest pervert. He used to go to sex clubs. Who even knew there was sex clubs in those days? But he was there, you know? And he used to drink. They drank. They all drank like beasts. They went to sex clubs, and the guy came up with inventions. The guy came up with, like, all these inventions. The guy came up with, like, a new alphabet. Like, Ben Franklin was, like, I mean, it was amazing the body of work he put out, you know?
Yeah.
And still have time to drink all day and go to sex clubs. And still be a fat bastard at the same time. And
wow.
A old guy with a mullet.
Speaking of fat bastards, I'm losing weight. I just want you to know I'm doing really
good. That's great, Jimmy. Good.
Thanks,
what are you down to? How much have you lost?
I'm trying to get to my original weight, 7 pounds, 6 ounces. But now I lost now. Let's see, 26 so far.
That's great. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I'm every week I'm losing at least. I'm going to say 2 to 5.
Yeah, you're going to bed hungry. That's the only way to do it.
Yeah, 2 to 5. So I just thought I'd throw that in there. I know you've been a big inspiration to me. It's amazing how that weight just creeps up on you, man. It just, I'm just
my
stunned.
God, it's ridiculous.
I'm stunned. I argued with the doctor.
You know, I was thinking about it. I was talking to somebody about it the other day, and I was saying, even somebody like Kim Jong-un, who has all this power, he can have people killed. He can have people, he has the power of millions of people in his hands, which he's using badly. But I'm saying even he has to pass the smell of that baked bread, whatever's around the palace he lives in, and he can't have the power to go, I'm not going to take a bite today. You know what I mean? That's the power of food right there. You look at Kim Jong-il.
That's right.
Look at any fat dictator, and you realize he has the best trainers, best nutrition. Nope. You can't resist.
No, exactly. No, and it talks to you. I know it talks to you. That's why I don't bring it in the house anymore, because it's Jimmy. 2 o'clock in the morning. It's going, Jimmy, come here. Everybody's sleeping. Come here.
That's right.
Taste this.
That's right.
Taste this. Come on. Look at this chocolate cake. And you know, I'm doing that low carb. So I went the other day. I went over Victoria Jackson's husband's birthday party.
Wow.
And this guy is like in his 50s. He's unbelievably in shape. I mean, this guy's like ain't got an ounce of fat on him. But he sat down that night and ate 2 large pieces of chocolate cake with ice cream. I mean, he told me it sucked as he was eating them, scarfing them down. But, man, you know, and I didn't do it. And I didn't do it. And he had pizza.
Why did he not have fat on him?
Because he's a helicopter pilot for the Dade County Police Department. And the guy just works out. He's been that way all his life. He's just phenomenal.
I'm saying helicopter pilots are not in great shape.
This guy is. He used to be on a SWAT team.
He's in a helicopter all day. How's that a workout?
Well, he's not in all day, and he has a gym over there, and obviously
he's an elliptical cycle, right in the helicopter.
Well, he's got a hangar. They have a gym, and he works out. You know, he works out every day. Guy,
it's genetics with him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess so. You're right. I mean, I look at food, I gain a chin. Yeah. You know.
Hey, can I interrupt with a non sequitur?
Yeah. What a who? What a who?
What a what a now? I love Collins. I love Colin's take on Jay Leno, that we love to beat up on Jay Leno because it's our sly way of attacking the Midwest. That's brilliance, my friend.
Thank you. It is true. Jay Leno's the, right. He's like the, because his jokes aren't that big. Yes, I understand he's a little too, his persona is a little too accommodating at times. You know what I mean? Like there's something about it that's a little, but it also comes down to attacking his audience. I had the same theory years ago about a couple of all different things, but it's going after the audience because you don't like the fact that this guy's successful because a certain type of people would like him. You know what I mean?
Right. You don't think of that way of Stewart. Stewart is like, okay, he's the thinker. Jay is the joker, and not. That's a very clever insight. I also, not to just continue to sing your praise, but
I got a lot of time on my hands. That's why I can come up with those shit in my house. When you sit, guess what? You can be very insightful when you're sitting in your house in the dark watching TV and be on the computer all day. It's surprising.
The whole take of treating President Obama differently because we don't want to appear racist, so we're going to treat him different.
Right. That's in the show, too, where I talk about how people say, well, they won't make jokes. I mean, they won't make jokes about him because if you make jokes about him, that's unconsciously racist. They go, I'm going to prove I'm not racist by treating him differently than I would a white president.
Good for you.
Makes no sense. No, I mean, that's the insight of Colin Quinn, my friend Jimmy.
Well,
thank you, Michael.
Let me ask you this.
Michael, by the way, Michael, can I say one thing?
Yes, sir.
I appreciate that. I don't know if Jimmy picked it up. But anyway, I think we have to go over that one more time. But anyway,
I'll tell you what, you stumped me. I'm stunned. I'm just thinking what I'm going to eat
Jimmy's
for lunch.
Jimmy's like, he's too busy. He's too busy. I mean, this is a guy, I don't want to say he's gullible. He believes a helicopter pilot's working out 5 hours a day. I said, why is the guy in shape? He goes, he's a Dade County helicopter pilot. I was like, what? Did he carry the helicopter on his back? Was he repelling down to Biscayne Bay 5 times a day? No. He's sitting in a chair, just like a guy working on a computer. What's his excuse?
Channeling a little Pat Cooper.
I know. The past few years, I really have turned into Pat Cooper. It's not kidding me. It's really scary.
Kitchen, and you're throwing in those big words. I got trouble with Bob. How does it matter? Because he's telling me I get bored here. I get bored. Big words? This is not the show for big words. This is the show in the trenches. You dig up a hole and you fill the hole again. That's all the show is about. You ain't going to go nowhere after that. After here, there's no musicals. It's over. Trust me. Trust me. The new kids are coming along. They dress different. They're pissed off because I got a members only. Who cares? Who cares?
Well, let me ask you a question now, all right? Now that we're talking about Jay Leno, let's bring it down to my level now, okay? Something I can understand. I'm very upset, and a few other people. We've brought his name up on other shows with other comics, and people seem to be upset with it. Here's a guy that he's where he's at today because what? Because of Carson. He did the Tonight Show many, many times,
right.
And he even let him host it. And why is this guy, what is your take on it, that he doesn't give other comics the shot that he had? Why would he be like that? He's got the job. He's got the gazillion dollars. You know what I mean? And why wouldn't he have comics on night after night to give somebody else a shot? Do you find selfish? Or what is your take on that?
I could say none of them really did. As far as I'm concerned, let him in the same thing. I don't feel like any of them put on enough comics. I agree with you 100%.
To get the shot that they had, it's almost like, and you know, I knew Eddie Brill who booked Letterman.
Right.
And it's kind of weird. And, you know, I mean, Eddie Brill just being himself would book you, knowing you're funny, you're a good comic.
Yeah.
But I mean, the guy came back to me and just said, Jim, you know, he's looking for different and weird. I mean, that's what his answer was to me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you're funny, but he's looking
for like. That's what I'm saying. All these guys don't put on enough comics, in my opinion.
Yeah, and this is what made them their shot on The Tonight Show. You'd think he'd want to give it back, because I got to tell you, folks out there, all the listeners, Colin Quinn is the most unselfish guy I've ever met. Just in the business, out of the business, next to the business, there's no one that's helped more people when we started than Colin Quinn in every way, even money. Everybody hit you up for money. When you were doing good and remote control and you were making a few dollars and we were still broke, everybody hit Colin Quinn up for 500 here, 200 here. Because I done it, I'll admit it. And I think
you had that hand extended, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I popped him for a few G's here and there.
That's the funniest thing anyone's ever said on a podcast. I get it, I'll admit it.
I popped him for 5 years, 600, 700 here, and he waited sometimes years. Sometimes it was years. I promised him 2-3 weeks, turned into 2-3 years. But you know what? I always paid him back.
That was shit, mate.
But, right. You know, and I know there's a lot of them out there that really never paid you back. But not only that, Colin, you were always gracious.
I'll leave Reynolds out of this.
No, I know. Reynolds. You look up IOU, and here's his picture. Reynolds. But you know something? You even opened the doors for my first appearance on television was you had a show on remote control. Well, you had a special on MTV called Going Back to Brooklyn. And believe it or not, folks, his director on that was Ben Stiller. Might have heard of him.
That's right.
And I had my scenes. You got me in it. And I'm in about 2-3 scenes where it cuts to me black and white. And I'm your childhood friend saying negative stuff against you. Which was easy.
Yeah.
But,
wow, I know that.
You know, so, and Ben, not knowing Ben Stiller was the director, but that's the kind of guy you are. You always open doors for people. You'd either try to get me a job, you'd lend me money.
And now look at us.
And now you won't do that. Now you won't do it when I need it.
Is that enough?
I mean, there was room for me in that Broadway show. I could have done 10 minutes for maybe $500
right.
a week. You know what I'm saying?
You're 100% right.
500? You could have took 500 out of that grand. You still come out with a grand. You know?
Yeah, I came out with a couple of grand, yeah.
We could have picked up money selling DVDs, CDs, T-shirts.
You know what I'm saying? It's funny you say that because the first thing I thought on this show was like, boy, this show could have great merch. You know, you have like a little like anything with a stupid word constitutional on it. The government probably doesn't own that. That's the beauty of America. I can steal the government's constitutional logo and use it for my own selfish means.
Now, you're going to sit here and tell me on this show you're not selling any merch?
Not yet, because it's only been, you know, it came up at the last minute.
You know, that's a thing. A lot of people make a fortune selling merch. I'm not one of those guys. It like annoys
me.
I want to get up and do what I do. I can't sit
me
there
too.
Thinking, I got to sell a CD and a DVD.
I did the cruise ships.
I finally did it, but I don't enjoy it. But there's still a lot of money. Guys make more money selling the merch than they do for the performance.
That's right. So, I was thinking you could do little booklets. You know what I mean? I had this whole plan. I was going to leave them on the seats. Nice booklet. The program could look like a constitutional convention. The same kind of writing. And I said you could have I can't remember the other merch already, but I had some good ideas, believe me.
Well, let me tell you something, Colin. You know, my career's going all right, but I got a few months available. And, you know, maybe we'll talk and I can run your merch counter or something there, you know?
I would love it.
You know, I know people in New York. We can get through to the union thing. I could squash that, you know?
Maybe some Thomas Paine bobbleheads, your little, you know, dolls. I mean, why not? The lunchboxes alone. The wigs. Wigs.
Let me ask you something, Colin. When you started in college, where did you start, actually? Where was your start in college? Did you go right to the city? Because you were from Brooklyn, obviously, right? Where'd you grow up?
Yes. I went right to the city. I mean, first I did Pips. I got to run downstairs. Can I call you back in 5 minutes? I'm not kidding, Jim.
Yeah.
I got to run downstairs. I forgot it. Shoot. All right, I'll call you back in five, guys. We'll wait five minutes.
We got it.
Bye. Sorry.
That's Colin. Always on the move, folks.
How much more polite is that than a Richard Lewis?
Oh, just Richard click. Just left.
Just click.
Richard would have just left. Richard, he does it. He's been doing it to me, Richard Lewis, for 20 years. It's just his signature.
Okay,
I think he did it. Didn't he do it to us?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right at the end of the show, just click. Just gone.
Exactly.
I think the callback for the show is not mentioning Seinfeld's name. Listen, we don't want to be the guys, so we won't. We're not going to mention Jerry Seinfeld's name. You know, he directed your show. He put you in Comic in Cars, Getting Coffee, you know. Because, you know, Jerry doesn't need the publicity. That's the callback. And just bang him on it every 5 minutes.
That's good. Yeah, let's just, right.
Until his head just blows. Yeah.
Just keep bringing up Seinfeld.
We're not going to bring up. We're not bringing up Jerry Seinfeld. You know, he's way too big of a star. The focus should be on you. Now, do you get really upset like when you go on a Fallon and all they do is they mention Jerry Seinfeld?
Right. Yeah, we'll just bring him up every, what, about 5-7 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, I would like to be the show, the first one in history to have Colin on and never mention Saturday Night Live. That's our gift to Mr. Colin Quinn.
Wow.
Yeah, we're not going to do it. Now, if he brings it up, I'll just steer away. Like, I'm not even aware.
No, we got to bring up Saturday Night.
You can't. We got to be the only show in the world that does.
Can't.
No,
we
nope, 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 nope.
Yep.
Listen, do you want to be different or do you want to be like the same? Listen, Mark Maron called. He said, we're not depressing enough. So, I mean, I don't think.
No, we got to throw Saturday Night Live in. It's too big. He was on there too long.
Five seasons, Chris Rock, Adam Sandler, right?
Yeah.
Everyone made their bones on that. I mean, massive. But wouldn't it be cool if we were the only show that doesn't bring that up with him?
I don't know.
Take a risk.
Nah, we got to.
You got to?
It's too big. Too much a part of his career. But I like how you're thinking.
No, okay, how about this? I'll give you one. I'll give you a replacement. That. Imagine Crocodile Dundee.
Oh, we got to bring that up.
Crocodile Dundee 2.
I remember seeing him in it and thinking, my friend's the biggest star in the world. Meanwhile, he had like five lines.
Yeah. Now, did you know that he actually rewrote the script?
No, for that five lines?
No. He rewrote the entire movie and gave it to them and go, listen, this is going to be a much funnier movie.
I see so, Colin doing that. When Colin believed in something, he was opinionated. He would tell you.
He's got like one line in the movie. Charles Dutton was the one who took Crocodile Dundee around New York, and Colin's like, wait, that doesn't really make sense. Once you have a kid from Brooklyn do it, I'll do it. So he rewrote the whole movie.
Wow.
Of course, they didn't do it. You know, but the goal of a Colin Quinn to pull a stunt like that.
He would, though. He didn't care. He turned down more stuff in his life, sitcoms.
Hello.
Is this Mr. Colin Quinn?
Yeah.
Now, what was that? Did you have a delivery?
Yes. No, I ran downstairs. I had to get to the dry cleaner. They closed the dry cleaner. I had to get my shirt from the shirt.
I dig that. I know what you're saying. But you were saying you were in the middle of talking about one of your first gigs, because you lived in Brooklyn. You grew up in Brooklyn, right? What part of Brooklyn did you grow up in?
Park Slope.
Park Slope. One of the only white kids in the neighborhood at the end, too. Park Slope.
No, Park Slope's all white now.
But it used to be Irish and then blacks moving in.
It was Irish, Italian, but it was always mixed. You know, grew up in Park Slope, by the way, three blocks away from me, Pat Cooper.
Oh, my goodness. You know, he said you could tell every building by its kind of leaning a little bit. He was the worst bricklayer, he said, in the world. If you look at his work, they lean.
Oh, hilarious.
He had the original tower, leaning tower Pisa. He did. But let me ask you now. So you're playing this club in Brooklyn, Pips. You're actually in Pips, one of the original comedy club, believe it or not, in the United States. So you're there. You're starting out new. So what happened now?
I'm starting out new. So you know you're just so excited. You just want to get on stage. You know. So it had a little bit of a reputation as a place, like you said, it existed, and there was a sign in the window. Whatever it said. Let's say it's a Joe. You know. Joey Terranova, whatever his name was, not appearing that night. And remember, it's on the outside. So somebody had put up a sign that said that, right? So I didn't think anything about it, you know what I mean? So I go in, the club doesn't open yet. Finally, it opens. The guy comes and rips down the sign, you know. They go in, open the club, audition night. There's about seven people in the audience, nobody in there.
Right.
I'm getting up to go on. About 10 guys, you know, tattoos, you know, local white beater guys come in, kids, you know, in their early 20s, come in, start flinging chairs. Show's over, everybody out, show's over. What? So they said the show's outside. Joey Montevrino, whatever his name was, Joey Terranova, he's outside. He's on a truck outside. So
you're kidding.
I'm standing next to the owner because I'm going to get in good with the owner. The kid guys are threatening him. I'm covering his back because I'm like, I would rather get beat up. I was so excited about the idea of being a comedian. If I could get in with this owner, even if I have to get beat up, it'll be worth it, right? So I'm standing next to Seth Schultz for the other guy, right? I'm like, shit. I'm like, this, I'm going to get in with him, you know? And he, you know, he doesn't want to fight the guys. He's like, hey, get out of here, you guys. I'll call the cops. But it worked because he gave me a shot that Friday night because I stood with him. But I go outside. Here's what happened. The outside on a flatbed truck, Joey Terranova is doing stand-up comedy because he didn't pass. He had auditioned the week before, and they didn't pass him. Right?
Wow. So this guy was obviously connected. He knew some people.
He knew some people. So instead, because they didn't pass him and his friends came back and, like, terrorized the place. And here's when I should have left comedy and never gone back. Half the people, of those seven people, are standing there. The other ones left and just went home, probably. The other ones are out there by the flatbed truck listening to them laughing. They're like, yeah, you know, the show's out of here now.
That didn't matter, right? It just went right outside. And listened,
it didn't
and
matter.
Actually
they're
listened
like, yeah,
to, and
they were laughing. The show here, yeah.
They were laughing?
And they're laughing at dumb jokes, yeah. He's making jokes like, yeah, you ever smoke a joint like this? And, you know, like, yeah, you ever hanging out? And they were like, oh, ha, ha. Like, oh,
that's geez. Classic. That's classic.
Welcome to comedy. I mean, from that night, it has to be a little bit easier than a gang fight inside of the club.
No, but I love the street and you trying to kiss his tush by like, you know, I'll take a hit here and there, a kick here.
Right.
And there.
I'm standing right next to him like I'm his buddy, you know.
I got your back, buddy. I'm here. Colin Quinn, remember? This Friday, I'll be here.
Guess
Friday,
what?
Saturday.
It worked because you gave me a weekend spot on Friday night.
And I remember, Colin, when I started at Pips, you know, you get the junk nights, like you said, but when he gave you a weekend, you were like a made man. You were a made man then. That was the
biggest. I was so excited. I had a Friday spot and it bombed, you know?
That was the biggest thrill. I remember Pips, when they would pass you and give you a weekend, you were a made man. You were a soldier now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That was a big deal. Yeah. But, you know, I tried to earn mine, not try to watch his back and all. But
I didn't know I had to become his bodyguard in order to break in.
Yeah.
And that was such a bad. I hated that they had nowhere for the comics to sit. Except the bar, and it would just keep pushing you out. You're on next. It's like you had to stand by the bathroom. you know, to get on there. But people don't realize that was the original, one of the oldest and first comedy clubs truly in the country was Pips.
Emmons
Avenue in Brooklyn next to Joe's Clam Bar and Randazzo's.
That's right.
Randazzo's Clam Bar. How you doing?
I know. Yeah.
So what did you do then, Colin? From there, you said, now you knew the city clubs were where the industry actually got to see you. Those were the true showcase. People from the industry really didn't go to Pips, but they would go to Catch a Rising Star and the Improv. That's the clubs industry came to see you. So what did you put that in your mind, like going, that's my next step?
Yeah, go to the city and then, you know, get the, you know, waiting on those lines and waiting on line with, you know.
Did you do the line with the Catch a Rising Star Monday morning, 15 people wait on line?
Catch a Rising Star, that was right there Monday morning, yep.
And then they give the first 15 numbers out and you come back that night, Monday night.
That's right.
You did that, Colin?
Many times.
Wow. So when did it break for you? Like, what was the club that you became pretty much a regular in of the city clubs?
I think it was first with Comic Strip. I got a bartending job at the Comic Strip. Jim Mandrinos, I was a bartender. So Jim Mandrinos goes, you know, they're looking for bartenders at the Comic Strip. You should go in and get the job.
I didn't know
when
that.
I got the job. Yeah. And I bartended there for a while, and Lucian said, I can't audition you until you're not working there anymore, because he just figured I'm a dumb bartender and thinks he's funny. And then after I left, he goes, okay, you want to audition? And I auditioned for him. He goes, you were really great. He goes, so original, blah, blah, blah. So he passed me at the club. So I started working there, doing late night spots. Me, Chris Rock, always, Sandler, late night spots. And then eventually I passed the catch. But when you pass the catch, you thought, I got it made. I'm made. And, you know, then you had to sit and wait for another, you know, year before you get a spot because it was all these name people, you know.
You know, Lou DiMaggio mentioned that when he was on the show, that exactly what you said about Catch a Rising Star was you passed, but it might have taken you another year or two to really get spots on stage.
That's correct. That's right.
Wow. And then who started noticing you? Where were you getting most of your time? At the Comic Strip?
Mostly at the Comic Strip, yeah. And then a catch. And then I got in, yeah.
Are you writing along the way? I mean, are you prepping? Are you aware, like, hey, MTV is starting to do some different things? They're taking off music, and they're going to try comedy. Are you writing along at this time?
Am I writing stand-up?
Yeah, I'm writing stand-up. And are you thinking about television at this point? This is 84, 85.
I never thought about, this is like 85, 86, but I never thought about TV. Like I never thought, like, yeah, I mean, I thought about TV in a certain way, but I thought about, like, it was so hard to write any material when I started. Like, now I feel like I really know how to write, you know. I can write all the time. But at the time, I just couldn't understand. So every day, I was more worried about trying to write jokes and get laughs because I would bomb all the time. And, you know, I had a few minutes at work, but it was, like, so inconsistent that I was more, like, concerned over the fact that here I am, trying to be a comedian, and I can't, you know what I mean? Like, I can't get it together where I can be, like, a guy that can go out and do it. But certainly not an hour, you know what I mean? I mean, I could talk my way through 20 minutes, but, you know, that being a comedian to do an hour, it's a whole different ballgame. So that was my whole thing. I was like, how come these, it seemed like some people could do it, you know? And I was more concerned with that, you know?
Yeah.
I could do local stuff, you know?
When did the break come, like, I guess the break for you was MTV.
Was MTV, yeah.
When did that come? What club were you in, and who noticed you, and what happened?
I don't remember where I was. I mean, I don't remember, but I know it was MTV guys, and they brought me in, and they're like, we want you to be this announcer, and I had such just a bad attitude.
You know what? The Colin Quinn attitude. I love it. I love it. Tell them what happened. What happened?
I just had the attitude, like, I'm too good for this. How dare they? You know, I just had that natural thing where I was like, how? You want me to be the announcer and read, you know, the advertising?
On TV
thing?
That millions of people see? What are you, nuts? Better
yeah,
than
like,
this.
I'm your advertising guy. And so I started reading I started reading it really sarcastically, like, Mitsubishi, what a great truck. So they tried to sell, some of them wanted to fire me, including all the sponsors, of course, Mitsubishi and the rest of them wanted to fire me because I was doing such bad readings of their products, so sarcastic. And then apparently they found out
kids loved me for being so sarcastic. You know, kids was into me. They loved the fact that I was so miserable and sarcastic reading the products that then they just kept it as part of the thing. You know what I mean?
Well, and not to get weird, but if you were to look at like Dennis Leary pre-Colin Quinn exposure, much different than post-Colin Quinn exposure. That whole, just the way that you approach that and like, I don't care. I'm so anti-establishment, but I don't really even care that much to be anti-anything. I'm just here.
Yeah, I was a very nihilistic person, and plus I was smoking at the time. And the first season on MTV, they let me smoke on the air.
Yeah,
they let you smoke in the air, or you couldn't.
No, they let me the first year. They stopped me the second year.
And let me tell you something, folks. Go ahead.
Yeah, when they stopped me from smoking, speaking of miserable attitudes, when they said, "Hey, we don't want you smoking on the air anymore. You know, it's bad for kids." You would have thought that I was living in Russia, and they were trying to suppress my great novel. I was like, "How dare you tell me I can't smoke on the air?"
And folks, let me tell you something. This guy didn't smoke; he made love to his cigarettes. No one smoked. Like you were. Oh my goodness! I don't remember you a chain smoker, made love to them. You were just a guy that you would go, "Will never stop smoking. Never stop."
I loved every cigarette I ever smoked. And one of the reasons I quit is because James Labriola himself, I was talking to Jimmy one time. We were always trying to quit, and he was quitting and getting back into cigarettes. And I was talking to him one time. He'd gone back on cigarettes, and we were talking. And in my mind, I was like, my personality has a lot to do with cigarettes. It's who I am. It's part of my personality. And I was talking to you. We were having a few laughs on the phone, as we always did.
Right.
And I was like, so I said, when are you going to quit again? You go, no, I quit. I haven't smoked in 2 weeks. And that was one of those breakthrough moments in my life where I was like, Jimmy's still himself. I was just talking to Jimmy, and I thought he was smoking because he hadn't lost his personality at all. So that brought me to a weird psychological space. It was really important for helping
you. You always told me that, too. I didn't realize it had that impact on you for smoking.
It had total impact, you know, because it was like, yeah.
And to tell you what different times there were, back in the 80s, I couldn't do my act without a cigarette. I could not go on stage and do my whole act. It was such a part of my persona and yours.
Yeah.
You know, that I remember asking audience members, you got a cigarette? You know? And I'm like, how am I going to do my act? I mean, geez.
Well, you
could tell, here I am, cheap. I'm so bad. Not only am I borrowing money off you, but I'm hitting my audience for cigarettes. You know?
Now, how much did Bill Hicks figure into this? Like, you know, hey, I'm up to 2 lighters a day. Was he a vibe for you?
I mean, I heard about Bill Hicks, and, you know, I'd never seen him. It was a different time. It's like, you didn't just see footage of people. If you didn't catch him on a show, that was it, you know? And he had no specials out at the time or anything. But, I mean, I heard of Bill Hicks, and when I met him, you know, like I said, my personality at the time was that when I remember meeting Bill Hicks and being like, hey, Colin Quinn, Bill, like two people, a lot of people talk about me and you, Bill.
By the way, I'm the sarcastic announcer on MTV. You may have heard of me.
Right. No, exactly.
But you had that attitude, man. God bless you.
Because I'm the comic, so I instead of just appreciating being a comic, I had a swelled head about it. And when I met Bill, he was like a really nice guy, you know. And I used to love him and T-Short. I used to always love when they came in from Manhattan because I used to bust their balls. Oh, you guys think you're too big for this place. I know what's going on in your heads. Screw these Manhattan comics. We're the Houston comics. They hate God. And I just used to, like, go in. And they love that, you know. But Bill Hicks was a very nice guy, you know.
He was. I got to meet him. About a year before he passed, I got to really know him and stuff. Good guy. And, everybody has a Bill Hicks story, man. It's a shame. And there's a lot of guys doing him out there now, you know?
Yeah. Well, it could be a lot worse. I'd rather have him doing him than a lot of people, right? I
mean, that's true. And let me just mention, on this show, we don't talk about Jerry Seinfeld on this show.
We think he's had too much publicity.
So we don't bring his name up.
We're not going to bring up the fact that he directed your... your very successful Broadway play, or the fact that he put you in, you know, comics in cars getting coffee, or any of that. We're not mentioning any of that.
This not on this show, my friend. This show's about Colin Quinn. We don't mention him. He's got enough. He's Jerry. Hey, Jerry, nice talking. You've always been a nice guy, respectful. You know when I respected him, Colin? When I saw him sit at your one-man show in California, and he literally sat there and waited till the end of the show. Everybody left. You know, they were all around you, shaking your hand and all. And then when everybody left, he got up.
Who did?
Came over to you. Jerry Seinfeld. He came over, waited for Colin.
I remember you telling me that.
And I said, I met him a few times with you. Hello, how you doing? But after that, I said, that's a real guy. That's a friend.
I remember you saying that. I remember you telling me that.
And that's a friend. So let me ask you now. You're miserable, but you're happy. You're happy because you're miserable.
He's a friend, but what's that?
No, I'm saying you're happy now. You're on MTV, but you're miserable. I remember you. You're always miserable.
Right.
We all were. We're miserable, but we were happy being miserable.
Right.
I mean, we used to have... Do you realize we used to have 4-5-6-way conversations? Remember when that came out? Where you can call somebody, call waiting, and we get on. And Reynolds was there. Reynolds is probably the most miserable of all of us, I'd say.
Yes, I would think so.
Yeah, but so now you're getting this vibe. What's going on with MTV? You're really picking up momentum now, right? People are like
digging. Yeah, but I mean, not stand-up momentum. More like, you know, just like cult of personality stuff where we go on the road and we break things and we have a blast and... It's fun, but you're not really doing anything that you want to do as far as, you know, the stand-up gigs are weird now because people are just, like, young and screaming and drunk, and it's like you can't really say anything. You want to do jokes, you know. So it's kind of a weird time, you know.
So 18-year-old kids, not an easy ticket sell to the comedy club where they're expecting you just to be that guy. So you're now that guy.
Right.
You're not Colin Quinn anymore. How do you crawl out of that wreckage?
Well, only because... I'll tell you exactly how I did it. I failed for a couple of years till all the fans went away, and then I was able to come back. And just
brilliant. Brilliant. You pulled a Howard Hughes. Brilliant.
Yeah.
And then what was your next big break after
SNL? You know, SNL was the next one, yeah.
How did that come about now? You started as a writer, like a lot of people, most people
think. I started as a writer there. Fred Wolf
got
me in as a writer.
Okay, hold on. 49 minutes. Jim, 49 minutes. Just want to let you know, we set the record, the podcast, to go 49 minutes without
mentioning SNL. We weren't going to mention it like everybody else. Okay. We're different here. Oh. We're different on this show. But let's see it. So go ahead. How did they call you? What goes on?
So Fred Wolf recommended me. He was working there. And he recommended me as a writer, you know. So, hello?
We're here.
Oh, okay. So, sorry, somebody was calling the other one. I gotta leave.
All of a sudden, he got dazed. It's the dry cleaner.
Yeah. Okay, so go ahead.
I gotta leave in 10 minutes. I gotta go to the damn theater.
All right.
But so anyway, I got hired as a writer, and then one thing led to another. Next thing you know, I'm doing a show, and you know, it's like great. I mean, here you are in New York. It was good, you know.
So you're writing on a show. When were you offered? You did a couple of bit parts too, right? You played some characters.
I did some bit parts. I had really fun doing the little side things, you know, and then when Norm left, got booted, then they said, hey, you know, we're going to bring in these people, and I was like, all right, I'll do it, you know, if you're going to, I was like, I don't want to take Norm's job, but if he's gone, I'm not going to wait, watch them bring in somebody else, you know what I mean?
Wow, so he gave you, Lorne Michaels gave you that shot then, did you have a long talk with him, did you have to sit down, take him to dinner?
No, you always sit down with him, you know, but I was already there, and people were like, they were like, yeah, I guess Colin will do it. He seems like the most logical choice. Or at least that's what I thought. So, you know.
And it was just very successful right out of the box for you? Did you get good responses?
No, I actually got, it was the beginning of the internet, and I got a lot of bad responses. To this day, a lot of people hated the way I did it, you know?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people felt I was a very miserable person.
The three for me in history. The three were obviously Chevy, Norm, and you. To be able to come in on that beat after Norm and all that weirdness that was happening backstage and the fighting this kind of, and then you jump in and you're just Colin. I mean, that was perfect timing, at least in my life. And was that the first time you really got to kind of be very topical, get known for like political stuff?
Yeah, Yeah, it was really an interesting little thing, you know. But it had, you know, it was like anything else. It had definitely had its ups and downs. You know what I mean? It was like, to this day, people want it all to be perfect because it is the dream in some ways, you know. But it's got its, you know, it's got its great and its bad things about it.
How many years did you do the news for, Colin?
Two years.
Okay.
Two years.
Yeah. I thought you were phenomenal doing that news. I thought you were, and you had to write most of that too, which was incredible.
Yeah, you write some of it, but now I feel like I could really do it correctly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if I did it now, I feel like I could write perfect jokes every week. You know?
Now, obviously, HBO was really big for you on the long story short. Are you thinking about maybe doing another panel show? Are you thinking about maybe hosting something that you control?
I mean, of course I would, but, you know, we'll see what happens. It's, you know, like, they don't want my kind of panel show, you know what I mean? Like, my show would not be like, you know, hey, guys, welcome to the big, you know what I mean? I want to do it the way I want to do it, you know? And if I can't do it that way, it's not going to happen, you know? Because I'm not going to sit around and just do a, you know, it gets too boring to do a show where you're like, hey, you know, I guess today, and just everybody's like showbiz, schmoozy, you know? I don't like it.
That's one thing I admire about you being your friend all these years is that you always stick with what you believe in, whether it's your comedy, a show. Because I know over the years you've turned down a lot of things. I believe even pilots and stuff because you just thought it was stupid. And you're like, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah, I want to do. I feel like I put in so much time writing that I still have the same attitude I had then, only now I feel like I've actually earned it. Where I'm just like, why would you hire somebody else to write this when we all know how great my writing is?
I got to tell Jimmy a story that he didn't know. Of course, you're most famous for your starring role in Crocodile Dundee 2,
right,
where you attempted to rewrite the movie.
Yeah.
He told me that. Is that true?
That was before. I was basically an open mic comedian. I wasn't really even making money. I think I was still bartending. And I looked at the script, and the script had, you know, the script was me. Was I had one line, but the script was Paul Hogan, but getting led around by some, you know, guy around New York. And I read the script, and I go, nah, this script, they shouldn't, they're not doing New York correctly. I'm rewriting for it. And I rewrote it. Well, now he's being led around by guess who? Coincidentally, me. And I handed it in to these Australians, and luckily Australians are not like, you know.
No, they're pretty loose people. They're not politically correct. They're great audiences, too.
And they just looked at me like, this guy's an idiot. I'm sure they were thinking, what a jerk off. But they just said, thanks anyway, thank you. I was like, all right.
And they kept you in the movie. They kept that part.
They kept my little one line in the movie. They figured it's just another asshole extra. They probably didn't even read it. They probably just figured this guy's a moron, you know, just ignore him. Give him one line. If he causes any more trouble, security will escort him off the set. He's obviously got delusions of grandeur.
Wasn't your first movie Three Men and a Baby? Was that your first
part? Yeah, I had a little scene with Tom Selleck in that.
Selling him a little toy. You were selling a toy for the baby.
I was selling a toy, yeah. And, oh, God, I was just so, I was just so bad in that, yeah.
Let me tell you, when I saw you, your friend, you got to remember now, there's no such thing as a small part. When I saw you on that giant screen, of course you got to tell everybody, that's my friend! That's my buddy!
Yeah.
You tell everybody. Oh, my goodness. Right? It was to be in a movie or even on television for 12 seconds.
Yeah.
Back then, it meant something.
It meant something.
And when I saw you up there, I'm like, this guy, I can't believe it. He is truly Sinatra now. He is made. He's really, a Hollywood star. Yeah. He just said, he said three words. He's a Hollywood star.
That's how I felt, too.
Yeah. He's actually now, I'm already going to borrow more than $500 now from you. You know, I'm sizing you up there going, this is like $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 easy in his pocket for me.
But I also learned a good lesson on that movie, which is you can never really get away from, like, Leonard Nimoy was the director of the movie. And this is before the Star Trek remakes came out. You know what I mean?
Right. I didn't know that. Jeez.
Yeah. So he was directing. He'd moved on. He was directing. And in the middle of a shooting, he's sitting there giving people director advice, like, I'm a director now, I'm a different type of guy, you know.
Star Trek was a long time before. Nobody was really talking about it. And just then, those Puerto Rican kids got off the bus at Broadway in 99. They go, Spock! Spock! Where your ears? Spock, where your ears? And I was like, oh, you never can escape your past, you know?
No. But that was, a matter of fact, I might have borrowed $3,000 from you then. I'm trying to think about that.
I certainly had it for a minute there. But I got to get the hell out of here. I got to go to the theater in 2 minutes.
All right, buddy. Listen, we really enjoy, you know, hey, just so thank you so much. I'm going to see you next week.
Mike, I love you.
All right, thank you, Colin. What a hero.
I love you too,
ladies and gentlemen, Colin Quinn.
I'll
see you in a couple of weeks.
Next week. I'm going to see you. I'll be up in New York next week. So,
all right, 2 weeks. Great.
Yeah, break a leg. He's at the Barrows Theater. He's in Unconstitutional. Make sure you check him out.
Go out there. Where can they get you to? On Facebook and Twitter? Get information about the theater.
What do you mean, about the theater?
Yeah.
I'll tell you the information. Tell them to Google my name and Google Unconstitutional. What, we have to do all the work for them and give them a link? Google it. What's the matter with you people? Hey, what's the link? I don't know. Why don't you Google it? There's like 50 pieces of information. Some nerds just to bother to trouble to invent the internet, and you people don't want to use it. You want a link? Leave me alone.
And do me a favor, folks. Go see, what's it called again, Colin?
Oh, forget about it. You can't even remember the name now. You wanted to.
Now, is Jerry Seinfeld in it?
All right, bye, guys.
Love you, Colin. Go see him because I need the money. Please, help him out.
Bye.
The Ha Ha Jim Comedy Hour. Follow Jim and the show on Twitter at Ha Ha Jim. Show links and every episode available at hahajim.com.
He's a sweetheart.